Everyone, we have our Davenant Shorts little podcast. These are short 10-minute episodes where we talk with the Davenant faculty, professors, lecturers, and some staff about the upcoming Trinity term, which is from April 8th to June 15th. Registration ends March 29th. So after when this one publishes, you'll have 2 weeks before registration ends. So you better enroll soon if you want to register for these classes. But we have Colin Redemer on for his upcoming course, Philosophy of Law. So if you want to learn about law and philosophy of law, this is the course you want to take from a self-professed Aristotelian. So we're gonna talk about this upcoming. So thanks for coming on the show, Colin Redemer.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me. Good to meet you, Peter. This is our first time talking, I think.
This is right. Yeah, this is my first time talking to a lot of the Davenant folks. I've heard you guys now, it's cool to actually put a face to the name and the organization. So first, you want to just in a short way introduce our audience to yourself if they don't know you, and then those who do, maybe just a little bit more, and then how you became a Davenant Hall lecturer, and maybe to your recent promotion to executive director, which happened when this publishes about a month ago.
Got it. Well, yeah, my name is Colin Chan Redemer, and I'm a professor at St. Mary's College of California, as well as the executive director at the Davenant Institute. And for those of you who are just finding out about the Davenant Institute, I was sort of in your shoes, you know, close to 10 years ago when the Davenant Institute was just getting kicked off, and they had a couple of articles going around on the internet, and then they host an event down at Biola about the future of Protestantism. And I was at the time working for InterVarsity Christian Fellowship, and I was thinking about what the future of the church was going to look like and what the needs were going to be. And it was clear that the kind of thing Davenant was doing was the kind of thing that we needed. It was able to take Christians who were wrestling with the problems that the culture was throwing at them and realized they needed some deeper intellectual roots that they could tap into. And I, you know, immediately started contacting Brad and other people, Brad Littlejohn, who was the founder.
He's got the greatest name, Bradford Littlejohn.
Yeah, that's right. And we started collaborating. So I've been working with Davenant for about 7.5 years now. And for the last 4.5, I think I've been the vice president working with Brad, and Brad's moving on to other things, and I'm stepping into the captain's chair, and we'll see where it goes from here. But I've been teaching mostly in the philosophy department since we founded Davenant Hall, which is our school, from about 2019 and to the present.
Yeah. So I think there's no one more appropriate to ask this question than Mr. Redemer. What makes Davenant Hall unique? You've already talked about this a little bit, but there's a lot of theological education. There's a lot of reform seminaries, institutes, whatever it may be. So what plug does Davenant Hall fill amidst kind of higher theological training?
Yeah, I mean, my sense is that the Davenant Institute, just we take ideas and history very seriously. And so we're not happy with canned answers. We're not happy with a sort of survey text or the sort of 20,000 foot view. We recognize that you actually have to get into the weeds sometimes, and you've got to think in a much more textured way about reality if you want to be able to see reality clearly. And, you know, one part of reality that I think often gives us a canned answer is the history of Christianity. You know, you can hear lots of different versions of that canned history, you know, whether it's a decline narrative or a conquest narrative or the oppressor narrative or the oppressed narrative.
Yep.
And all of those things sort of get to some aspect of the truth. You know, what we would say is that the history of the church is, it's really complicated. And there's a lot of different aspects, and you actually have to make space for people to wrestle with that, to think about and realize the parts that they love, and then to be able to think through some of the trickier things. And so, you know, for example, what is the relationship between Christianity and the law? You know, that's, and the truth of the matter is, when you start getting into the sources, and rather than dealing with the survey, and I mean, I remember taking, I got my master's in theology from Fuller Theological Seminary, many great classes, many great professors there, but also just some very obvious surveys where it was like, okay, we're going to deal with, Descartes in 15 minutes. Okay, we're moving on, and when you get into the weeds, you realize we're not the first people to have thought about this stuff. And that actually I take to be an incredibly encouraging thought, that when you show up at Davenant, you realize, oh my gosh, I'm not the only one. I don't have all of the answers, but neither did John Calvin.
There you
He had a
go.
lot of them, but
Yeah, he had a lot more than we did, but he still had a lot of questions that he didn't get answered. Cool. So I've already talked about it, philosophy of law. And I mean, I maybe for your average person, they're like, I'm not really sure what philosophy of law, I mean, isn't the law? Like, why would you have to have a philosophy of it? So what are you teaching this term?
I'm going to be teaching philosophy of law, and in part, it's a class that if you go to get a law degree, and so I'm hoping, last time I taught this at Davenant, we actually had a number of lawyers show up, and the reason that they wanted to take the class is because they had studied like the American legal system. They had studied how you file an amicus brief or whatever, like that, the process
Yeah, the
of.
practical outworking of the law.
That's right. But contemporary legal study in most colleges does not have any explanation about the relationship between two things, the law and ethics. And this is why I think lawyers get a reputation for being a bit smarmy, sort of Saul Goodmans of the world.
Reputation, they are smarmy.
Well, hey, it
I'm just
depends.
kidding.
Hashtag not all lawyers. The relationship between law and ethics, and the relationship between law and metaphysics or truth. And this is an interesting phenomenon because historically speaking, every one who got a law degree would have had to take something called jurisprudence, which would have at least begun answering these questions. And that's primarily going to be aimed more towards law and ethics, but it would hint at law and metaphysics. In the United States system, really, it's only the Roman Catholic
Really?
colleges that have law degrees who will require you to take a class on jurisprudence. If you go back in history, though, this would have been the standard. It's like one of the first classes you have to pass before we're going to let you study how to practice law
Yeah.
is where does law come from? How does it relate to truth? How does it relate to goodness?
You just talked about Calvin. This is what he did. I mean, he was trained as a lawyer.
That's
That's
exactly right. And so this is one of so anyway, that's my pitch for philosophy of law,
So
is
if you
we're
want to
really
be
going to
John
be,
Calvin, you take philosophy of law is what I'm hearing.
you have to take philosophy of law.
There you go. Well, there's a ringing endorsement if I've ever heard one. So what are students going to be reading and engaging with? Because if we're honest, most of the students who are coming to Davenant or coming to any one of these places, they're looking for the books. Like what's some of the stuff I'm going to be reading, engaging with, wrestling with, like you said, complicated questions that don't have easy answers. If you can kind of tease that, so if they're like, "Oh, I would love to read this with Colin Redimer as my guide."
Yeah, absolutely. So we're going to read a little bit of Sophocles' Antigone. We will read probably some selections from Aristotle's Politics. We'll read Thomas Aquinas's Treatise on Law, as well as Plato's Laws, which is one of his largest and least read dialogues. And then you might wonder, so somebody on your audience is going to say, why are we reading all of this stuff? Like, what does this have to do with Christianity?
All dead stuff before Christianity.
That's right. And what I will say is, it's interesting that you mentioned Calvin. We will not be reading Calvin, but most people who read Calvin, or just kind of probably more likely own Calvin and keep it on like a bookshelf, read the 1559 edition of his Institutes. But the original edition,
Yeah,
which
which is
is
the very late edition of Calvin Institutes.
more written by him, is the 1536 edition, which I have right here. Okay,
Which can I
some
say, as a
major.
27-year-old writing that is just ridiculous.
Totally. Yeah, right out of his schooling, he writes this as he's trying sort of like fleeing persecution. And there's an interesting feature about it. So it actually opens with a chapter, and I just taught this at my church, cover to cover with a bunch of guys. And he opens, after he writes a letter to the king, of course, which is what you do, with a whole chapter on the law. And then he ends with another chapter. So he bookends the entire thing about the relationship between the law and the freedom that we have in the gospel, which is sort of it's a chapter that's very much echoing and citing from Luther's On the Freedom of a Christian.
Yeah, absolutely. It sounds like it. Yep.
Now, in so first of all, as you said, right, he himself studied theology, then he studied law, so he had both of these things. And one way to think about Protestantism is, of course, theologically. Another way to think about it is legally. We have to ask ourselves, how is what we're doing legal? Because you are not at liberty to just break the law. And if your, king says this is the truth, and you're just like, well, I'm not going to listen to that anymore, that's not acceptable, right, in the world that they live in. So they have to rethink the relationship between the Bible and the law. And as Calvin is writing this, I actually had to run and grab this book so I could find it for you. He has a line in here where what's he doing in this paragraph? He's making fun of, probably making fun of the Catholics at some point, to be honest.
Yeah, I
And he
just read
says,
Luther's On the Bondage of the Will, and the dude is a wordsmith and a sarcastic SOB, which is
right.
not too dissimilar from Calvin's stuff.
That's right. That's right. And so he's talking about the sort of ceremonial aspects and the foolish gesticulations and old womanish little ceremonies which stupid priestlings who can neither swimming nor letters perform exceedingly well. Okay. So
Us what you really think, Calvin.
that's right. Now, what's missed in this, if you don't read it in a scholarly edition, is that he's actually quoting there, just off the top of his head, from Plato's Laws. Book three, even though in the words of the proverb, they know neither how to read nor to swim. Okay. That is a long roundabout way for me to just be saying, if we want to take it seriously to be, what it is to be Christians, we need to be able to think about what that means. And for us, it means being Protestants. And that means that we have to, of course, read Calvin and Luther, but I think there's far too many Christians who stop there and they don't ask themselves, what formed these men into who they are? And if you ask that question, you realize you have to read scholastic philosophy, you have to read ancient Roman and Greek philosophy, and recognize the relationship that these things have to the state of the church as it currently exists, like the church that you're sitting in on Sunday. Those are the kinds of questions that you're going to answer if you take philosophy of law with me. I also forgot to mention, we will be reading Richard Hooker's a selection of his laws as well.
Cool. So, last question. As a professor, you've been one for a little bit now. I'm assuming the goal is not just to open the student's brain and then insert some information, close it back up, and then send them on their way. But you want to shape them in some way. You're hoping this course shapes them in some way. So how are you hoping this course shapes your students after they take it?
Yeah, it's a great question. I often say that the modern educators think that the mind is a sausage casing and we just have to shove more knowledge into the sausage casing. And the ancient educators really thought that the mind was like a cocoon, and if we just wrap it in the silk of truth and goodness, out of it, we could emerge as something different than we are. And that's been my experience. As an educator for over 15 years, I think that there's a lot of people, maybe even who didn't consider themselves great, or nobody considered them great students per se, right, when they were young. But if you actually take the time to read through what Plato says, to read through what Sophocles says, this has a formative relationship to you as you're dealing with contemporary questions. And hey, we're living in a very antinomian age, and you might not know what that means if you're not a Greek scholar or something, but it just means anti, against, nomian, nomos, law, custom. We're living in an era where people want to just run the red light. They just want to get the five finger discount when they're walking through the store. And we don't, and this is a great opportunity for you to take some time and think about, what does that mean? Like, what does it mean if that's how we're going to live our lives? If that's how we're going to structure our society, what relationship does that have to the truth? And not to get a canned answer that just says, don't do it, obey the law, kid, but to actually be able to think it through.
Yeah, that's great. Well, for first-time students, whether you be a full-time student, an auditor, or if you take this course for some sort of certification. We were given a coupon code. So this is GGG Trinity 24, and it gets you $25 off. So if you're like, man, I'm down, I'm out $25. I need $25 to get into this course, then we got you. This is GGG Trinity 24 for $25 off. And you can take Colin's course. You can take any other course within their catalog, and you get that $25 discount. But Colin, thank you so much for coming on our show, and hopefully people take your course.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure, Peter. Really love being here and excited to see what's going on with your podcast moving forward.
Awesome.